Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Bye-bye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. This week I had the pleasure of sitting down with Dr. Zoe Hudson, who is a menopause specialist and works to help those experiencing menopause navigate it in a compassionate and caring way, understanding that it is a journey and that things will change, but to be seen as a positive rather than a negative. We speak a lot about the link between menopause and disordered eating and how people that will experience the menopause have probably put a lot of pressure on themselves to meet expectations throughout their lives. And actually, when it comes to the menopause, it can be difficult to adjust that. And a lot of the similarities that we see in people with eating disorder recovery, we can see in people experiencing the menopause, and also a lot of the feelings of wanting to control food and diet and body can resurface during the menopause. So we speak about how Zoe supports people in navigating that and to find compassion for themselves during what is a big change, but doesn't need to be met with the stigma and the shame that it is met with, and how we can support individuals in embracing the change rather than being worried about what's going to happen. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm actually so excited to chat to you because in my job, we have been doing a lot of stuff around menopause, and my mum is also going through the menopause. So I feel like over the past few months, I've learned a lot more since we spoke before. But I guess I just wanted to start the podcast with, I'm assuming most people will be listening to this episode because either a loved one or themselves are going through the menopause and potentially they've got difficulties with eating. But if people are listening and they're like, what the hell? Like, I've never heard of menopause before. Can you tell us what the menopause is?
So menopause itself, we're really, really lazy because menopause itself is actually what's called a retrospective diagnosis. So if you're not on any hormones, it's a year, it's a year after your last period. So menopause is just that day. Everything after that is post-menopause. And then before that is perimenopause and then premenopause. But instead of saying premenopause, perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, we call the whole thing menopause.
Wow. So the menopause is literally the one day of that was your last period.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And I think
I've learned something new already.
There we go. And I think we're one of the things we're still nowhere near standardizing knowledge based from healthcare professionals, from people going through menopause, is perimenopause. So that can last on average 4 years before menopause, but you're still, if you're cycling, you're still cycling. So again, you can be having, and it's often the tidal wave time, so a lot of people have worse symptoms before the menopause in the lead up to menopause, and then when the hormones level off, that can actually be a lot easier for a lot of people.
Right.
And again, the average age of menopause in the UK is 51, but one in 20 will become menopausal between 40 and 45. So their perimenopause could start 4 years before that, one in 100 below 40, one in 1,000 below 30. And some people right on the other end never start their periods, so start menopause very, very early. So I think this is why it's on the radar at the moment, which is great, but we're still seeing a lot of people that aren't on social media, don't have any workplace support, and are still really scared and really wondering what on earth is happening to them. Mm-hmm. So I think until we have that standardized knowledge, everyone will keep shouting loudly, mm-hmm. waving the flag. And I'll link you to a brilliant booklet that Diane Dansbrink from Menopause Support, it only came out about a month ago. So if I send you the email link for that again,
yeah, that'd be brilliant. Thank you.
It's really, really good and loads of useful information. So yes, that's in a nutshell.
In a nutshell, yeah. That sounds nutshell. Great. And it's funny, well, it's not funny, but it's like there's so many questions to have about menopause. And like, you know, we obviously are speaking about menopause today, but we're linking it to disordered eating. You could do like a whole, well, I bet you could make a podcast about menopause. So it's difficult to...
There are many.
To put it into one small thing. But I guess my first question is, so... menopause, mm-hmm. what we're probably most familiar with is the one day, like the last day of a period. Mm-hmm. So how would somebody know when they're going through, if we do perimenopause first, mm-hmm. and then move on to postmenopause, how would somebody know that they're going through perimenopause?
So what you're looking out for is if you're not on any hormones, is a change in cycle. So it can be that your cycle length changes. So you can have shorter cycles, longer cycles, irregular cycles. They can become heavier, lighter, but they change. So that's one of the clues that things can be happening. And then there are lots and lots of symptom checkers out there. And you can see why. I think traditionally all of the focus was on hot flushes and sweats. But there are so many symptoms. And I think what you're looking for is symptoms coming in clusters. So there's a lot of psychological symptoms, so anxiety, low mood, mood swings. You've got receptors, hormone receptors, absolutely everywhere. And I think once you realise that, some of the more bizarre symptoms make sense, things like dry mouth, dry eyes, mm-hmm. burning mouth, gums receding, tinnitus, joint pain, skin changes, hair changes, palpitations, gut changes, vulvovaginal bladder changes. So you can get this strange itching at night called formication. And I think once you start to, so again, it's looking at changes and just making a note. And often these changes will be cyclical to begin with. So people can find that if they've had a history of things like PMS, it will become longer throughout the migraines are one as well that quite commonly will become worse and they can be on a set. So it's looking at changes and just making a note of them. There's lots of symptom trackers out there that you can keep a note of these things. So it's just changes. And then you're sort of starting to look at, are these impacting on my health and well-being? And is it time that I need to dig? Well, ideally, you'd have what I would love, and what seems to be happening more is you'd have a sort of a generational hand holding and mm-hmm. support to say, yes, I think this. So a lot of people I see, it has been people around them that have said, I think you could be perimenopausal.
Right.
Because again, when it's yourself, I think we are very, very good at saying, well, this is due to what's going on in my life, or this is due to that. And it's often quite hard to be objective. And this is where keeping an eye on people close to you, even work mm. colleagues, and saying you seem to have changed. Irritability and rage is a very common symptom. So that can often be one that sort of triggers a conversation. But it's, I think you've changed. What's your cycle doing? Then, of course, if you're on things like hormonal contraceptives, if you have things like a Mirena, for example, you might not be having a cycle. So in that case, it's again, it's just looking, am I getting symptoms? Are they becoming more prevalent? Could this be? So I think it's as I say, it can be, we call it an insidious creep. So the symptoms can gradually build. And it's looking at, well, where was I 2 years ago? Was I having any of these symptoms? Some of these symptoms, were they problematic? So it's trying to put it all together, but I think there are lots and lots of symptom checkers out there to start to keep a little log of these.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think what you were saying about like other people noticing as well, like particularly with my mum, I remember her just being like, oh, you know, it's not that bad. I'll go to the doctor when it gets a bit worse. And then it's like, well, you know, these symptoms have been lasting quite a while. Mm. And like you say, they're they are impacting all of us, not just you as well. Yeah. But I wanted to ask you a question about, like, you know, if somebody's on hormonal therapy so that they're not getting mm-hmm. a period, how do they know when they've reached the menopause if the menopause is not having a period?
Well, that's the thing as well. You have to track the other symptoms. So again, some people on the combined contraceptive pill, you know, when you have that week's break, they'll start yeah. to notice symptoms coming in at that time. Mm-hmm. If they're on the mini pill, they may have, as I say, they might not be having periods. The Myrina, they might not be having periods, but they start to sort of track these other symptoms that are coming along.
Sure.
So I'd say right. you wouldn't come off your, if you're using those for contraception, you wouldn't come off them to see what was happening. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we ask you to, if you're again, because the younger you are, the more important it is to make an accurate diagnosis. So sometimes with that, we'd ask you to come off for 6 weeks, see what the underlying cycle is doing, mm-hmm. and do blood tests to check that. But again, it's age dependent. So over 45, we know the guidelines are bloods aren't necessary to make a diagnosis.
Right.
40 to 45 can be considered, and under 40, it's again, we should be getting a diagnosis through blood tests. Mm-hmm. So okay. it's a bit of a, as I say, it's this is why it's so individualized mm-hmm. in symptoms, in how it presents. But I think there are sort of common themes and threads. Oh. And you're right, we just need to keep an eye out on everybody yeah. around us.
Yeah, I guess that's what makes it so difficult, is that it is so variable from one individual mm. to another. And then I guess just move into the post-menopause. So is post-menopause literally like from when you have your last period, so that's the menopause, to then basically when you die?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And are there specific symptoms there, or after that, do things calm down?
So there's a cohort of people that will have sort of problematic symptoms for a while, and then there's another cohort that the symptoms will gradually settle down. Mm-hmm. But there's a, as I say, there's some people that will continue to have persistent troublesome symptoms. Mm. So I've seen people that have had flushes keeping them up at night for 20, 30 years. So that's not everybody. Mm-hmm. And again, some people, and the counter side to that is some people who've had really problematic hormonal symptoms, things like PMDD, so premenstrual dysphoric disorder, can actually feel quite a relief when all of that settles down and it flatlines. Yeah. It's sort of, oh, finally, I'm not ruled by my hormones. Mm-hmm. So again, it's very variable. And this is what, so there's again, you'll see an older generation will say, I sailed through mine. I think there's selective memory going on there as well. And again, that generation might not have had quite the same pressures that this generation does mm-hmm. to be working, looking after everybody. Yeah. I think I would always say be very respectful of someone else's experience. Because again, even if you are not having a tough time, somebody else might be.
Yeah.
And I think this is the thing, isn't it, with all of these things, with the eating, with everything, it might not show on the surface, but it comes down to just being kind and respectful.
Yeah, absolutely. It is funny what you said about people, like the older generation saying I sailed through. I know so many people have said that to my mum, and she's just like, well, I'm not sailing through it. So that's really really not very helpful to hear. But I guess on the topic of the eating difficulties, what sort of have you seen in, you know, people that you've supported with the menopause, kind of the development of eating difficulties? Has that been something that is commonly developed like during perimenopause and then kind of persisting then, or has it been something that people have already had and the menopause has made it worse, or is that pretty variable as well?
I think, I mean, the data, as we've discussed before, is really, really poor on this. Mm. So I think perimenopause and menopause can tend to amplify vulnerabilities, I would say. Mm-hmm. So you'll see people who've had a history of anxiety and then it's settled, and then perimenopause, the anxiety comes back again but feels a bit different. And I think there's a lot of vulnerability in perimenopause, because again, your hormones are so potent and so powerful that a lot of people can really feel that sort of carefully controlled hamster wheel of busyness is falling out of their grasp. that they're not able to keep all the juggling balls. You've got a lot of physiological changes going on as well. So it is very common for sort of weight to start accumulate around the middle and on the heart, the hips and the thighs. Now, there's various theories around that, that when your ovarian estrogen is dropping down, your body tries to lay down fat. And fat has another estrogen called estrone, but it's not very potent, so it doesn't really do the job. The other things that you can find is sleep is very commonly disrupted, and that has an impact on metabolism and hunger hormones. Anxiety, cortisol, adrenaline can be going through the roof, and again, that can have an impact. So there's very often a change in shape. And if you have a predisposition, or that has been something that has been at the forefront, again, you can see why that would start to cause anxiety. And you can hear the slight sort of frantic tone.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
With some people, will HRT cause me to gain weight? There isn't any data that it does, but perimenopause can change your metabolism and cause you to gain weight. And I think, again, I mean, there's so many threads and nuances to this, and that goes all the way back, doesn't it, to, I would say, when to childhood, to when we are getting so many messages about shape and nutrition. And I think we're finally making a bit of a breakthrough with that, that the focus is moving away from thinness being the goal and strength being the goal. And I really hope that this momentum goes forward because this should be things that we're learning in our teenage years. So it's such a big picture.
Yeah. And I can understand why. Oh, I think whether or not you've got a predisposition to kind of eating difficulties, body image struggles, you know, there's so much pressure put on, I think, you know, historically on women for the way that they looked. I would argue now it's pretty equal for men and women. But there is so much pressure, and that doesn't go, you know, I think from observing my mum and her friends, and I'm being very anecdotal because I keep referring to my mum, but you know, they have become so much more confident in themselves as they've grown up and gone older and kind of, you know, less take less bullshit from people, and you know, I'll do what I want to do now. However, I remember distinctly, like you just said, when my mum started thinking that she was experiencing pre-menopausal symptoms, her first thing was, I don't want to go on HRT because it'll make me gain weight. And that was like her biggest thing. And I was like, you're going through all of these symptoms, but you're willing to kind of not have support with those symptoms because the weight gain is the biggest concern. And I think that showed me how much of a stigma and how much of a pressure there is on women to look a certain way and to, you know, be able to achieve certain things. And that for me is another thing that I've definitely noticed in the workplace, in terms of my colleagues, kind of women that are at sort of the age of experiencing the menopause, of being like, oh, you know, I'm really sorry, I've got brain fog, or like my memory's just, and they'll take the mick out of themselves. And I've said to quite a few of them, like, please don't feel like you have to, you know, answer for yourself or whatever. If you need support with something, then please, like, I'm happy to help, but don't kind of feel like you've got to take the mick out of yourself because of what you're experiencing, because one, you know, you can't help it, like, you're not doing it on purpose, but two, other people experiencing a similar thing will then kind of
take on that thing
for themselves, and they'll feel judgment and embarrassment about their symptoms. But I think it is one of those things that kind of, there's still so much misunderstanding within society of what actually happens to a woman, and the impact that that has on them, and then how we sort of respond to it as well.
Just coming back to that sort of strength on the other side, this is something that is, we see over and over again. So this is the whole thing, that the early stages and other, I mean, other conditions, things like surgical menopause, medical menopause, where you have hormones and then don't have hormones, can be absolutely catastrophic. But on the other side, so I've done some lovely talks recently, and lots of them have had almost all of the generations in. So there've been people that are nowhere near perimenopause, people that are in perimenopause, and then you'll find a few people that I will say are out of the other side. And they've said exactly that, that you can, again, we know that you can have problems with verbal memory. So this is where the brain fog and the word finding can come through. But that is, it's transient. It doesn't stay. But when you are, again, when you, it feels as though, so your sleep is disrupted, you don't know who you are, your shape is changing, and then your work is changing, it can just feel, you can, absolutely devastating. And this is where we need, so what she was saying, this was a group of barristers, and she said, you will get through this, but what we need to do is be looking out for each other. And she quite rightly said, there's data to show that your performance in general isn't affected. So I think because we often try and overachieve to justify our sheer existence, then if it drops down by 20%, you're still achieving. But it was that thing of, there should be an allowance to say to a colleague, could you just read this through for me and check it? Because I've got brain fog at the moment. And doing that thing, and then their turn will come. And if we could get things moving in that direction, how much more comfortable would we be? And then if you didn't have that shame around it, that's likely to also help with the brain fog.
Yeah. And I think one thing I've heard as well is, you know, the changes in mood and things like that. And I think that very naturally, if you are somebody that gets a lot from their work or whatever you do in life, and then all of a sudden that's being affected, that's naturally going to affect your mood, because you're going to think, oh God, I can't do what I used to do. And that's quite scary. And I think that links, for me personally, when I'm thinking about eating disorders as well, it links in well of sort of being in a very vulnerable state of, you know, things are out of control, you can't control what your body looks like, and the changes that happen, in no matter how hard maybe you're trying to do so, you can't control your sleep, you can't control the emotions that you're feeling, you can't control how you're performing at work, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, what is the one thing I can control, you know? That's when you then turn to the eating disorder. So I feel like it's a, you know, a really vulnerable time, but I just don't think that the recognition of that is there, because we're still so focused on eating disorders being a teenage girl problem.
Yeah. And we've spoken before, and again, the word shame echoes through so much of menopause, and it really, really enrages me. So many things, because again, things like eating disorders, disordered eating, nobody sets out to say, I'd like to do that. And it's very often, it's an expression of pain, isn't it?
Yeah.
And again, with so many of these things, I mean, I see people who are drinking more than they should, and all of, or over-exercising, just trying to get some sort of calm and control back in this tornado. And again, it's, if they had some support and just mechanisms to say, right, okay, this is a normal physiological stage, it can be really tough, but it's likely that you will get through it. Let's put some structure in, because again, this is the thing, and it's very difficult to see when you're out of the other side. A lot of people will accept a change in body shape once they're through, and they realize there's this beautiful freedom about post-menopause with a lot of people. And they, as you said, the filter goes, and they no longer care so much about what others think of them. And they do what they want, and they say what they want, and they wear what they want. Now, of course, along that side, we want people to be healthy. So we're looking at very often symptom control and future health. And the other thing as well is, when you're saying, as I say, you resort back to tactics that have worked for you in the past, they're probably not going to work in the same way in perimenopause because of your physiology. So that's another thing of, I can't even do this because it's not working anymore. So I see lots of people that have always done sort of HIIT training and all these really high intensity exercise things. And they come and say, I'm doing all of these things and I'm just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's because very often at that stage, your body is just crying out for a bit of a rest and it needs a different tactic to, and we're looking at, as I say, building muscle. And so from a medical point of view, in a way, I'm asking people to change shape.
Mm-hmm.
And that I can imagine is quite terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. It's look for your bones and your heart health and all of these things. I want you to be building muscle. I want you to get strong. We've got to shed a lot of ideas about that.
Yeah. It's really interesting. And I'm saying this very naively. And I think this actually demonstrates to me how much we speak about eating disorders in younger people as opposed to older people. And obviously, like, the issues that, you know, when we talk about eating disorders in younger people, we talk about things like bone health, we talk about, you know, in women, we talk about losing a period and things like that. But obviously with the bone health side of things, you are only building your peak bone mass, you know, that's only up until like your mid to late 20s. And then it's kind of, well, you sadly it kind of just goes down from there. And if you've gone through the menopause, you've already not got a period, so that's not going to be something you would experience. So are there different or specific things to kind of perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause eating disorder symptoms that are kind of more prominent?
No, so we know that sort of postmenopause, again, you can start to lose 2% of your bone density per year for about 10 years. So one of the things that I'm picking up a lot, I would say, is people who in their teens and 20s weren't having periods, and that can be from disordered eating or overexercising, and they never told anybody. And again, the data is poor, but it looks as though if you've, I mean, again, somebody coming into that now, you would say if you were in your teens and 20s and missed periods for 3 or 4 months to see your GP, because we need to know why that's happening. But lots of these people never went to their GP either, because a lot of them just said, I was just really pleased not to be having a period. And there wasn't any awareness of what could be happening bone health wise. So not only are we looking at bone health now, we're looking at previous bone health, and has that had an impact? Has there been chance for recovery? And it's really complicated because to some extent, it looks as though it depends on your rate of recovery and sustained recovery. Because obviously we're looking at if there are intervals, and particularly even things like over-exercising, it even depends on the exercise that you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So things like netball, where it's variable movements, have a better outcome than things like running, which is the same movement. So
right.
You can see why it's going to be tricky to try and work out. But again, I would say the very low threshold for bone density imaging, if there's been a sustained period of time when you were laying down your bone density and now you're coming to another vulnerable time for bone density,
mm-hmm.
maybe we need to have a look back and also add that into the equation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think with... again, this is the, so we know that bones like hard work, they like resistance exercise, don't they? And this is again where we're sort of trying to get people to change. And I think again, I see lots of people and it's just trying to, and I know it's really, really difficult with when you've had that disordered eating blueprint, but trying to look at each things that you're putting into your body. These are the nutrients that I really need now. We need more protein going through menopause. We need that sort of eating the rainbow for the keep the microbiome healthy. We know that we're getting more and more information about that now. So it's instead of that, and again, another huge shift to ask people to do, instead of that sort of calorie counting, to look at, can I have 20 different varieties of fruits and vegetables? Can I add the grains in? Have I got the vitamin D? Have I got the calcium going in there? So this is all at a really vulnerable time. And I know I'm asking people to look at some really, really deeply held beliefs and values and change it all. and ditch it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the hard thing, isn't it? If you've been eating in a certain pattern for your whole life or exercising a certain way, to then be told you need to change that and the changes that you're going to make.
You've got all of this other change going on as well.
Yeah, and it's no longer going to align with your, you know, let's say you have had a drive for a thin body. It's no longer going to align with that because you now need to prioritize your health. I'm making an assumption here, but I'm going to assume that somebody that's been engaging in dieting and excessive exercise for their whole life, their health has maybe not been the priority. So I can imagine that shift is really difficult. And also, just thinking out loud here when I speak, but for what you're saying to me sounds really like looking after yourself. And as somebody that was putting themselves on a restricted diet or been excessively exercised, that's not looking after yourself. So it's that shift, isn't it, of your body's changing, your mood's changing. I'm now asking you to look after yourself after years of basically putting yourself through hell to look a certain way. You need to change your diet and all of this. And yeah, it sounds, I can understand why people do then really struggle.
And this is why I call it the littles. And I'm very, very aware of how hard this is. And it might not even be food related to begin with. It's asking people to get a journal and note three little changes they've done for their self-care. And that can be something like spending 10 minutes giving themselves a hand massage. And some people well up even when I mention that, because even that is such a big step. And so we have to go very, very gently. And I get it. But it's, and this is why I ask people to note it down. So there's a visual representation that I am now prioritizing my well-being and my health.
Yeah.
And then hopefully we can start to build on that. And I think, again, I mean, this is what yoga is just talked about endlessly because it's so good at menopause. And again, I think that's, it's a lot of menopause is about reconnecting to actually listening to our bodies instead of listening to all of the other noise and what we should be doing. And our bodies very often have been shouting at us for years. And it's that thing of trusting that it's actually right, which... It's hard.
Yeah, and I've just sat here thinking about, you know, people that I've spoken to with eating disorders, and listening and trusting to your body is one of, you know, the things in recovery that you have to do. And it is very hard to then do that. But I think so important to do that, especially when your body is undergoing so many changes, like you say. And, you know, I've had conversations with friends who are really into sports and they're kind of like used to be athletes and now they do it as a hobby, but they very much change the exercise that they do dependent on the stage of their cycle. So sometimes they'll be doing yoga, sometimes they'll be doing strength training, other times they'll be doing HIIT training, but they change that dependent on where their body is in the cycle and also, you know, their ability to listen to their body and know what it needs to do. But it's hard to do that when, particularly when we live in a society where, you know, you're kind of told that pain is weakness, leaving the body, and everything has to be hardcore. And if you're not sweating when you're working out, then what, you know, was there even any point in you starting?
And it's all hard work, isn't it? Hard work, hard work, hard work. And a lot of this is a lovely phrase called rebellious rest. That was the bit that I found the hardest, was I had full on burnout, crashed, and was just exhausted. And then just lay there for 3 months thinking, what on earth is my purpose? And that comes back to work again, that my entire validity, I think, was tied up in work. So it was a huge learning point when I couldn't work. And so, well, what's the point of me then? And then it's taken time. So although it's hard, it teaches you some really, really valuable lessons. And I've realized that there is obviously more to me than my work. My work is important, but it's not my entire self. That was a biggie. And I think that's, again, I see it a lot with people who are still trying, as I say, juggling all of the balls and can't, and we're pressured to have the house looking a certain way and present and present and present and appear. And I love this. You get this rebellion that sort of sticks two fingers up to that and says, no, I'm going to do what I want. But that's mm-hmm. that's quite frightening to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Even to rest mm-hmm. is frightening for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if I think about my mum, I think she's the perfect person for that situation. You know, she very much does used to define herself by her work and the way that the house was presented mm-hmm. and what she did, and she'd always be busy and stuff. And I'm now so proud of her when I get a text to say, I got one yesterday actually saying, feeling a bit tired, feeling a bit rough, so I'm just on the sofa with the dog. I'm like, this mm-hmm. is incredible. And the mm-hmm. fact that she can do that and tell me that she's doing that as well and doesn't feel mm-hmm. that, like you say, that shame or that guilt of, oh my God, I'm sat on the sofa and I'm not doing anything. And again, I know I keep saying this, but that's so common in eating disorders as well, is that mm-hmm. feeling, you know, my personality is engulfed by my eating disorder or the way that I present myself, the things that I do, like I've got to constantly be doing stuff. I've got mm-hmm. to constantly be improving. And so I can see why the characteristics of people that find menopause challenging and difficult to navigate would also be people that would be susceptible to the development of an eating disorder, because it also mm-hmm. it also gives you an identity and it tells you that everything will be better and you'll have a purpose and all of that. So mm-hmm. it does really feel like the prime opportunity for an eating disorder or disordered eating to step in and say, hello, I'm here yeah. to save the day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that sort of, and again, I think there's more and more, going slightly off tangent, but I think they do link together. So there's more and more people that are finding that things like neurodivergence is unmasking
mm-hmm.
in perimenopause. And again, you're looking at, seems to be a link between neurodivergence and eating disorders and mm-hmm. looking at dopamine pathways. And a friend of mine does something called epigenetic pathways, and you can actually get your genetic pathways and see where you've got susceptibilities
mm-hmm.
and you just think it all comes back to dopamine, doesn't it, and reward, and learning that what we've been told endlessly about reward
mm-hmm.
is wrong.
Yeah.
And I think this is when your estrogen drops down, you get this quite alarming clarity about the wrongs in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I think it's called the rage. I don't think it is. I think it's outrage, because you just suddenly mm-hmm. look around and say, I've been fed an absolute pack of lies for all of these years, and I've been going along with it and constructing mm-hmm. my entire life around this, and I'm yeah. exhausted, and it was all a load of rubbish. No wonder a yeah. bit cross.
Yeah. And actually, I could have done things my way and enjoyed myself and mm-hmm. still, you know, where has this rule book come from, and why is it
mm.
why do I have to assign to it
mm. so this is yeah. you can imagine what your head's doing with all of this and it says no wonder we get sort of mood swings. It's like, how on earth yeah. is my brain going to cope with all of this sort of almost fresh information and fresh way of seeing things whilst I'm still trying to juggle all the balls? And this is why, again, I see lots of people that need a lot of time to themselves, a lot of quiet time. I ask lots of people, again, at the beginning with the littles, to just go and be in green space for that vagal nerve and that really just observing again and quiet and letting your brain sort of meander through things, because it generally will come up with the right answer. But, I mean, I ask lots of people to go and consider supportive therapy as well, because I think you often get lots of things pinging back up that you hadn't thought about. And again, you can get lots of childhood things, so you can see why that would then link back to disordered eating coming. Oh, that worked, well, didn't work for you, but that was what I did then, I'm going to do. And this is all subconscious, it's not something I think that people actively choose. I'm going to try that again. And then they have that double whammy of probably doesn't work this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine that kind of, you know, going through that and then not kind of having any control, and the things that you used to do as a younger person not working would be horrific. So what sort of, when somebody comes to you and they're presenting with issues, maybe disordered eating issues, and also going, you know, they're experiencing these symptoms, what sort of advice do you give, or is there any interventions people can kind of have to support that?
So a lot of people that I see want to discuss hormone replacement therapy. And I was saying perimenopause, it should really be called hormone support therapy because you've still got background hormones. We're mm-hmm. just trying to settle some of the tidal waves. And I think, again, there's lots of misinformation about the risk of breast cancer with hormone replacement therapy. So we'll, again, the leaflet I'll link to has got a really good guide on where that sits. So that itself is, again, particularly estrogen is really, really potent hormone, and that can have a big impact on things like sort of your cortisol, your appetite, your sleep quality, even just going slightly off piece, it can correct your things like joint pains. So I get a lot of people that it's absolutely gone to pot. And bearing in mind the clinic that I run, I'm going to be seeing the cohort that are likely to be really struggling with symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So the data is that 25% don't have any symptoms. Now, again, that's debated because it might be that they don't know the symptoms, I suspect. 50% will have some symptoms and 25% will have really problematic symptoms. So this is by, is not everybody. But going back to that earlier thing, I think we need to acknowledge people that are really struggling and be kind. So we will often look, and I consider that HRT is very much a base layer. So just sort of try and smooth some of these turbulent waters.
Mm-hmm.
Once we've got that right, and that can take some adjustment, it's not a magic wand. I think there's lots of things out there saying I went on to HRT and my life was fabulous. That's not the case. So we can start to settle some of these down, and then gradually we start to do a reset. And this is, I would say this is the same for the majority of people I see, that somewhere we need to be looking at behaviours that don't serve us anymore. We need to be looking at ideas that don't serve us anymore. We need to be going back and thinking, right, okay, these things have happened to me during my life. I might not have had time, space, energy to process them. Is it a good time now to go back and spend a little time with them and put them to one side and move forwards? Because this is a transition. So you're going to come out of this a different person than you go into this. So this is, get lots of people saying, I just want to go back to the old me. Well, that's unlikely to happen. You're moving into a new you. And very often it's a stronger, more confident, more connected you. So, but that takes time. It's not going to happen overnight. So I think this is, as I say, we look at that as a base layer, and then we're looking at the props, I would call them. So what are the things that help the hormone pathways? Well, we want toxins out of the way. So it's looking at, again, if people have been using alcohol, dreadful for menopause. They're really not friends at all. You don't break it down in the same way. Exacerbates most of the symptoms, exacerbates your glycemic, your sugar control. So we're looking at, right, can we start to have a little look at that and gradually bring that down to either very low levels or stop smoking? Not so much of an issue these days, but again, if that is on the table, terrible for bones, hearts, all the rest of it. And then we're looking at nutrition. And again, it's that thing of what serves me. So what can I put into my body to really help my hormone pathways and my future health? So a lot of it, again, when you've got this tidal wave, it's also echoed by the sugar balance, because your body becomes more insulin resistant. So you can't cope with the fast release sugars in the same way. So we're looking at, right, okay, can we put a nutrition plan in place that will sort of stabilize those sugars flying all over the place as well? Again, can we stabilize this microbiome? Because we know that has a big influence on things like serotonin and GABA and sugar balance as well. So it's lots of different things. And the biggest one by far is, can I be kind to myself? Mm-hmm. Over and over and over again. That's the one that I think people have the most trouble with.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a sad reflection of the world. And this is where we need to do a lot of change
mm-hmm.
from right back at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's that thing of, I am important. And there's another lovely phrase that, so Karen Arthur, who runs Menopause Whilst Black, a support community, she and I were chatting because she said she did this when she was feeling quite low in perimenopause. She did a thing called Wear Your Happy, which was to just pick out clothing that lifted your mood, whether it was appropriate for the occasion or not. So she just picked out, I mean, she's got fabulous eye for what she wears, but it was just pick something out, whether it's a ball gown to go and do the food shop, whatever, just pick something out that will give you that, and dopamine's back in there again. Let's find less harmful ways of supporting dopamine. And as I said to her, I feel really uncomfortable being photographed, and it just feels a bit showy-offy. And she said, no, the whole thing of menopause is moving towards I am here, I am enough. And I love that phrase. It's little, but it says such a lot.
Yeah. I think what I've realised from this podcast with you is it's the little things, and recognising the little things as well is, you know, not making... Because realistically, you're not going to wake up one day and like everything be on top of you. I feel like it's little increments, and then you start to notice them over time and they become unbearable. So it's in the same respect of that is, you know, you don't have to then suddenly change your life in order to navigate it. You know, take it one step at a time. Like you say, be kind to yourself and do what feels comfortable for you. Because I think it sounds very similar to eating disorder recovery as well, as like when you put yourself under loads of pressure to do the big things, it often doesn't work because then it's just so overwhelming that you just stop doing it anyway.
I think with that as well, and there's similar trains again. So if one day doesn't go so well, it doesn't mean the whole thing has failed.
Yeah.
So I did a post a while ago, I loathe exercise, I always have. But I know I need to do some strength exercise now. So I did a post about, I was just going to try and do 20 minutes three times a week of strength. So the cardiovascular is fine. We've got a dog that needs walking. That's all sort of sorted out. And I was all very, I had good intention. The middle aisle of Aldi had some weights. I thought, excellent, this is a sign. And I spoke to a friend the other day and she said, how's it going with the weights? I said, I could blatantly lie and say fantastic. But the last few weeks, there's been a few bits and bobs going on and they've completely fallen off the wayside. So it's that thing of, right, okay, that went and now it needs to come back again, because I know if I repeat it enough, it won't be that big thing in my head. It will just be second nature.
Yeah.
And that's the thing again with the littles. It's sort of, right, okay. So I've taken myself for a walk in green space at lunchtime. Could I do this again? And could I do this again? And could I look at how I'm feeling when I come back? Am I feeling calmer? Am I feeling more alert for the afternoon? Can I repeat that? And then it will come to the point where you actually miss it if it's not that. We're very driven by habit, aren't we? And behavior change is hard. But it does, again, if you put it in there often enough, it becomes second nature. And then you can add another little in and note that down in your book.
Yeah.
And I think things like, I mean, one of my trainees years ago tried to get me to do a gratitude journal and she just got a look. So if you think I'm ever doing any nonsense like that. But again, it's that sort of thing. There is evidence for it. So what we're trying to do is a lot of these things, we're trying to stabilize these dopamine pathways with less harmful replacements, and they're normally quieter replacements, so they take a while, they don't get quite the hit to begin with, but we're just trying to. So things like the, as I say, the yoga and the cold water and swimming and things like that are really just trying to achieve some sort of leveling. And I think that applies to both things that we've been talking about.
Yeah, and I found as well, like in my own recovery, when I do something and I only do it like a little bit, like, you know, I'll add 10 grams of something. For me, that feels very bearable in that moment, but it's quite small in that it's not absolutely noticeable. Therefore, it just becomes normal, and then it's easier to increase that. And I guess that's like the, you know, you just take 30 seconds to write one thing down. It's difficult when it's something that you've never done before, for sure. But if you can start to integrate that, then, okay, well, I'm doing one thing and that takes 30 seconds. So now I'm going to feel okay to do two things and that takes a minute.
Yeah.
And then, like you say, it becomes something that's just a natural routine. And you might even get to a point where you don't then feel like you need to write it down and just thinking about
it. You can add a new one then, can't you? And just keep it growing and keep it growing. And I think it's, again, with some people where I've suggested one thing, because they normally I would ask them to come up with something that they could do nice for them. And some people just can't. And even suggesting one thing, you can tell it feels overwhelming. And it's sort of right, okay, just sit with this for a while. Where's that come from? Mm-hmm. Where has that kindness and care been lacking? And again, very often it goes all the way back to childhood again. And it's right, okay, is this the time to go and start with, I would say, with someone who's skilled, having a little look at that.
Yeah.
And reprocessing it with an adult brain rather than a child brain.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, again, it sort of comes back to, there's many analogies that psychologists use. So with things, and again with overwhelm, it can feel like that sort of someone's taken a jigsaw piece and thrown all the pieces in the air, jigsaw puzzle, and you can't see where to start. And it's the same thing again, isn't it? If you take just the corner pieces or the edge piece, and you'll start to join things together and you'll start to see the full picture emerge, and it's not overwhelming you, it's not swamping you, there's a distance from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of these themes sort of resonate through both of trying to take that overwhelm and make it manageable and put it on the table in front of you.
Yeah. And see the bigger picture and the sort of, you know, overall journey, rather than like this is what's happening right now and this is what needs to happen in the future. Yeah, thank you so much, Zoe. I feel like this has been so helpful, and I really do hope that people listening, I feel like both eating disorders and menopause can be a very lonely place. So I hope that people have found some comfort in that. I guess just to finish, do you have any suggestions or recommendations, if this is resonating with people, of maybe next steps for them or resources that they can go to get some more support?
So I think I love my books, the books that I recommend over and over again. There's one by Dr. Hannah Short that's actually titled it's Dr. Hannah Short and Mandy Leonhardt. It's called The Complete Guide to Early Menopause and POI, but I think that's a really good evidence-based overall menopause book. Lots of chat about HRT, but lots of lifestyle suggestions as well. There's a book there's a nutritional therapist called Karen Newby, and I like her book because it talks a lot about cortisol and you actually understand how the foods influence the hormone pathways. And I always like to know why I'm doing something. So that's called The Natural Menopause Method. And then there's a book that talks about the psychological transition called Second Spring by Kate Codrington. And I really like that as well. So they're probably my three go-tos for most people I see, because I think that gives you a lovely overview and a guide. I always sort of say, if we were starting on any other journey, we'd want, you know, you'd want your tour guide, you'd want some kit, and we just launch into this. So I think that even if you're, again, what we'd really like is people way before their sort of perimenopause. I think that's a really good overview of what could be approaching.
Yeah,
I think the main thing again is just keeping an eye on each other.
Yeah, definitely looking out for each other, I guess, checking in on your friends, family, you know, whoever that might be. But yeah, thank you so much. It's honestly been such a pleasure to chat to you after all the IT technical difficulties we got there in the end. So yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, well, you take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe.
Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.